and welcome to episode 66 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Treffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by Jennifer LaRocque, culturally responsive kindergarten teacher. She was a fellow presenter at the Ignite session that I also presented at, and I knew she would be a great voice to add to the show. Jennifer and I talk about culturally responsive teaching, the future of educators, the danger of standardized tests, teaching kids to greet each other and adults respectfully, and how her mom is the best teacher she ever had. So, sit back and enjoy episode 66 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Jennifer LaRocque.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Treffler. Today, I am joined by the second on the show, but one of the young educators who was presenting with me at the Ignite sessions this past summer in ISTE. And as we record this, it's October, so it's been 4 or 5 months later, and I'm starting to harass all of those guests to make sure they come back and speak with me on the show. And so I'm lucky today to be joined by Jennifer LaRocque. Did I say that right? I didn't even ask before we started. I should get better at that.
LaRocque. You said it LaRocque perfectly.
Yes. Go me. I mean, to be fair, you did put the phonetic in our meeting appointment, so I kind of cheated. But we don't need to tell my audience that. That's fine. I'll edit that out later. It's fine. So for my audience who don't know you, who are you? What is your assignment? And what is your passion?
Okay. I am a kindergarten teacher. I work in the suburbs of Chicago. My class is, I have a cluster of ELL students in my class, and my biggest passion is teaching culturally responsively, and we call my classroom the multicultural classroom. Basically, students can opt in to be part of a culturally responsive environment and be exposed to diversity and acceptance and tolerance. I'm also an adjunct professor at National Lewis, teaching graduate students and undergraduate students who are earning their ELL endorsements in teaching.
Huh. That's kind of cool that they can request it though. That's nice. I like that. Cause, we don't have anything like that that I'm aware of. I mean, granted, I don't have a ton of elementary experience, but that I'm aware of, we don't have anything like that where I am. And I think it's really cool that you can choose as a parent to put your children in that situation.
It's amazing. Cause all the parents in my classroom are so for their children be exposed to diversity and different cultures, and they love all the activities we're doing. And it's kind of like the role model of what culturally responsive teaching should look like for classrooms around the nation.
Yeah, that is very, very cool. And that is also what you presented on in the Ignite session at ISTE, was your experience with, as you put it, your journey of the last year of building your culturally responsive classroom, which is still hard to say. I don't know. I have a problem with that one. But you did a great Ignite and closed out the session, if I remember right, of Ignite sessions. And did a really good job talking about that. Can you tell me a little bit about your Ignite experience and what that was like for you?
So it was, ISTE was probably the best conference I've ever been to in my entire life. I was so fortunate to go and given the opportunity to be able to go to it. I've learned so much. And it was amazing to be with so many educators who were so much smarter than me and people in the technology field, but so much knowledge about things that were even above my head. And I was very nervous to do the Ignite session. I've never done one before. And I was very nervous about the 20-second slides having to go. But I feel like it was an amazing group of people to be able to present with.
Yeah, and you survived it, and it did very, very well. I would add as well. Your session, I felt like you didn't mess up at all. I know I did, so I felt like you didn't, and that's always a good sign.
I don't remember you messing up. My mom was in the audience, and she remembers talking your session, and she said she really enjoyed what you had to say.
You know, it's a thing with the Ignites where you plan it out. At least I don't know how you did yours, but I planned every word of mine. Yes. So my mess ups are not necessarily noticed by other people. I just know I didn't say what I was supposed to say on slide 6. And dang it, I think that's my version of it.
Yeah. Well, I just remember for my, like, I was like, that is like 20 seconds too early for one of the slides. So then I just started talking slower so that it would extend out to the next slide. But yeah, same kind of thing.
So how did you become passionate about culturally responsive teaching? Let's see how many times I can mess that up tonight.
I'm very passionate. I think today more than ever, students need to feel welcomed and safe in their learning environment. And I read a book by Zaretta Hammond. It's called Culturally Responsive Teaching in the Brain. And students who don't feel welcomed into their classroom actually can release hormones into their brain that can impact their ability to learn. And I want all my students to feel loved. I want them to feel accepted. And I also want them to go out into the world and know how to work with people from all sorts of backgrounds, how to be accepting, how to be tolerant. I really have high hopes for this next generation that they can teach us how to be accepting and tolerant and communicate in a positive and respectful manner to each other. And I think that's something as we adults that we can hopefully learn from our future generations.
Yeah, I would certainly hope that the future generations aren't worse at speaking fairly and calmly to each other, because does not seem to be the strong suit of my people right now. So I'd love to see that they're better than us. I agree with that completely. Yeah, that's just cool that you ended up, you know, sort of in that position, you know, and sort of had that passion for it. I think that's great that you sought that out and then are able to find a position. So when this culturally responsive classroom, is that something you advocated for, or is that something that existed previously?
It's something that we decided to do because I was already doing these culturally responsive strategies in my classroom. So we decided we don't have enough students to have a full, what we would call a sheltered English classroom. So what we decided to take the strategies that I was using for culturally responsive teaching about all these amazing people around the world, like Mae Jepsen and Malala and Nelson Mandela, and taking those strategies and opening up and saying, hey, who wants to be part of this classroom environment? Who wants to be exposed to this unique experience?
That's awesome. And how many years has this been going on?
This is the second year of the multicultural classroom.
So it was very new to you last year by the time you presented, in other words.
Last year was like my first like full-on journey of incorporating culturally responsive teaching. Doing it. And it was so fun. And I got such positive feedback from all the parents. And I mean, I got the nicest letter from one of my students' parents saying that he had such a unique experience that he would not have gotten in any other kindergarten class if we hadn't opted in to be in the class. And I think that's so powerful.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's very cool. Man, it sounds like you had such a great experience. And then to be able to right away, so sort of directly and immediately go to ISTE and present it out and to others. Have you seen responses as a result of that presentation? Have people reached out to you and asked for more information or said they really enjoyed your session?
Yes, I had a couple people see me like while I was walking around. They recognized me from the Ignite session and they came up and asked me about it. And they specifically were interested in how I do my STEM centers. So we do something called provocation centers every day in our school, which is basically it's a center time where it's basically more guided play, and students have STEM challenges and STEAM challenges that they complete with a question. And I try and incorporate global awareness through it. So I've had a lot of people and teachers reach out to me asking me more about those and how I incorporate global awareness during my center time.
So with a provocation, that sounds kind of like inquiry-based learning meets culturally responsive teaching. Every time I'm going to mess it up. Culturally responsive teaching. God, this is going to be a bad episode. Anyways, so it kind of sounds like you're mixing those two worlds, right?
Well, it's actually a provocation. There's actually a theory from Reggio Emilia. It's a Reggio Emilia approach, which is an early childhood philosophy. And so that's where provocations, you're literally provoking their thoughts. So you're providing that. So you're asking them thought provoking questions. So like, for example, one of my centers is they can have like magnetic tiles and Legos and blocks and whatever they want to build with. And then they're challenged to build homes from around the world. Or I research like famous architects from around the world and say like, hey, this is a famous building that they built. Can you try and build this? So you're giving them a challenge or a thought-provoking question, during those center time. And they're not all my centers are global awareness, but I try every month to incorporate some sort of diverse person or some sort of global awareness to the center that they can kind of learn more about the world around them during center time.
Cool. I really like that. I think there's an awareness and an inclusion in that that is just really powerful. And I mean, you obviously have the testimony from parents to support that it's a powerful learning experience for your students. So I just think it's great that, you know, you're doing that and you're starting it so early too. I mean, talking about doing it with the littles like that, I mean, it's pretty cool that you're thinking that far ahead. But you also kind of run the gamut because now you're also an adjunct professor, you said. So you go from one end, one extreme to the other. So what is that adjunct experience? Like, I'm always interested in a professorial take on the future of education. So what has that adjunct experience been like for you?
It's been amazing. When I was taking my ELL courses for my graduate work, I was just thinking there has to be a better way of teaching this, like than just like being lectured at and reading and reflecting. And I really wanted to make it more meaningful for my students. So it's just been amazing. So I'll teach them a lot of different strategies and PSYOP strategies. I incorporate, like, we play fun games like that they can take and then use in their classroom. I really try to give them tools and resources that they can take and use in their classroom beyond just reading a book and reflecting on it. I mean, I was like so done by the time I graduated with like reading and reflecting on like to the world and to yourself and to your classroom. I wanted to make it a more meaningful experience and really make an impact and really have meaningful conversations with them about why, you know, why is it so important that we scaffold assessments for ELLs and that we're really making sure that we're assessing content over language and really having those powerful discussions on why that's so important.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's a good approach to have. In a simple way, are you hopeful for the future of education?
Yes.
As a result of that?
I think that as much as like the politics and stuff is crazy right now, I think this is probably one of the best times to be a teacher. I think teachers are really exploring their engagement. They're learning more about how to be better teachers. You know, something I always say is like, know better, do better. And I think that we know better. We know that we need to, you know, not teach about Christopher Columbus discovering the world, that we need to talk about the indigenous people. I think we're exposing them to all sorts of different holidays and unique things. And I really see, like, I'm a big fan of Instagram and following teachers on Instagram. And the creativity with the teachers that they're trying to engage their students in these amazing experiences and really try to meet the needs of all their students. I think this is an amazing time to be a teacher. And I think that the students are only going to benefit from all the teachers around the world for their efforts.
That's a very positive outlook, I think. I think that's a very positive outlook to have. And I think it's nice. I don't know that I don't have the historical point of reference to be able to say that this is the best time to be a teacher. But I definitely don't know that a lot of people would agree with, or I know a lot of people would not agree with you on that. But that doesn't mean that they're right. Cause I also know that, you know, it's easy to see the negatives. I've often told people that it's very easy to go home and see the negatives, but there was also probably positives in your day. So I think there's a balance there for sure.
I definitely try to be, and
I'd like to believe.
I try to be a more positive person. I try not to get involved in like gossip and stuff at school. And I think that just really helps. Like, I think if you tend to be a more positive person, it will reflect in your teaching and reflect in your classroom. And hopefully, you know, you can spread that love and positivity to your students. So,
yeah, I would hope so. Well, not to completely turn the other direction and 180 on you, but I would like to ask you my first question I ask all my guests. And the first question I ask all my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Biggest problem? I would say the biggest problem is standardized tests and putting so much focus on assessments. I think that we need to not be teaching to the test. I think, you know, teacher evaluations shouldn't necessarily depend on test scores. I think, you know, I think some of our little ones have so much going on in their lives that some of those test scores are out of our control, because it's, they have so many other bigger problems going on in their life. And I think we really just need to be focusing on the students. Something that I always say is, I believe in Finland, they don't even do any sort of standardized testing until they go to high, until they're like later going to college. So I think that, and they're the one of the best education nations in the entire world. So I think that says something, that they don't put stakes on standardized tests. And I think that that's something that we need to look at into a country, as a country, is why are we putting so much stakes into these standardized tests? And that shouldn't define our students.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's, I think standardized testing for sure is a problem the way it works here in the States. What I will say about Finland is that the average teacher in Finland makes a significantly higher salary than the average teacher in the States. And I think what we run into here in the US is that ultimately we don't trust teachers. And I know this from even personal, because even when you said, you know, Finland doesn't test till high school, I immediately thought, well, then how on earth do we know if any teachers have done their jobs before that point? And so I, which is not a happy thought to have for sure, but I do think there can be some value in accountability. And I don't know if you agree, but I think there can be value in standardized tests in certain cases. You know, if we take away, you also mentioned that we put so much pressure and so much stake in these tests. And I think that if you focus on that part of it, the tests themselves can give us valuable data. It's the stake we put in them that worries me. And so I think I'm in agreement for the most part with you on that. How do we address this? I mean, I feel like we're all screaming against the test, and yet nothing is changing. In fact, in most places, they're putting more and more value on the test. So what are we doing wrong as educators to not get this problem fixed?
Well, I just finished reading a book, The Wild Card by Hope King and Wei King, and they teach at the Ron Clark Academy. And one of the most powerful lessons that they said in their book is that they're very big on setting the stage to engage and in great increasing engagement. And one of the most powerful things that she said is that she did this really super engaging lesson where she transformed her classroom into a beach, because her students never experienced the beach, and they did a descriptive writing lesson. They did a whole bunch of things. At the same time, and this was like the day or 2 days before this big standardized test, at the same time, her colleagues were doing review packet after review packet and review packet, and they didn't understand why she wasn't doing the review packets. And her students did very good on the assessment. I don't remember the exact data of what they did, but they did really good. They did a really good job of on their assessments, because they had a more engaging experience than just putting that all that focus onto a review packet. And I think that as teachers, we need to take a step back and decide, think about what is more meaningful, us giving our students a great lesson or us doing a review packet, and not being so focused on the test that we feel like we have to do like review packet after review packet to make sure that they do well on the assessment, and just focusing on their learning rather than the assessment.
See, I like that, because that lines up with my own experience. You know, when I taught seventh grade English, I was that teacher. Now, I was not turning my room into a beach, but I was that teacher not doing the review packet, not doing the drill and kill, not doing, you know, the basic review, or even honestly, I would tell my kids during the first week of school, at some point, you're going to take a standardized test. You will not hear me talk about that again until about a week before the test. And that was it. Because I just taught my kids. And as long as you know your standards and as long as you know what you're teaching them for, then it doesn't have to be this, don't forget about the test, don't forget about the test, don't forget about the test, don't forget about the test. Like, we don't have to stand over them and cram it down their face. I think I can agree. I think that, you know, I'm with you. I like that. I like that a lot. What has your experience been? And granted, kindergarten, I'm assuming you don't have any major standardized tests at that point, right?
No, we don't. Sorry.
So that helps. That helps, I'm sure. I'm sure that helps. But, you know, I'm sure you've also talked to other teachers and seen these things yourself. You know, what has your experience been in terms of not talking about the test and thinking about other ways to teach in that sense?
I think that in my classroom, you know, I know what my students need to learn by the end of kindergarten. And I know I just focus, like, we focus on what we need to get done. So we need to get our letter sounds done. We need to get, they need to be able to be reading age appropriate text. They need to be knowing their numbers, adding and subtracting. So I know what the standards are and I focus on the learning of that. And then how they do on the assessments, I kind of use the assessments as a evaluation of what do we need to go back and review? What do we understand? And we can move on. It's more so a check-in with my students than focusing just on the results of the assessment. I would much rather that my students leave my classroom and they can tell me about Malala and they can tell me about Nelson Mandela and they can tell me about Diwali and Songkran, and they can tell me about all these amazing experiences and why it's important to be a global citizen than the fact that they scored, that they're reading like a second grade level book. I think that that's so much more valuable, and just focusing on their developing themselves as a whole child rather than just focusing on an assessment score. Does that make sense? Did I answer enough?
Yeah, no, it does. What would you say to a teacher who says, but I still have to give them the test? Depending on where you are, my pay is based on how they do on the test, and I don't have time to develop the whole person. I have to teach what they need to test on.
Well, I will say that many tests and studies have shown that students are not going to learn unless they feel comfortable and welcomed into their classroom. If they don't have, you know, we talk a lot about mindfulness in my classroom and being respectful. If they don't have the ability to calm themselves down and have those social emotional skills to be able to communicate, they're not going to do well on an assessment. And I think that it needs to start there. It absolutely has to start with meeting the needs as a whole child, making sure that they're emotionally stable, that they know how to deal with any problems that arise, how they can be problem solvers. I mean, they can tell you as many letter sounds as they want, but if they don't know how to problem solve in real life, then what help is that going to be with them once they get later on in life?
I think that's a perfect reply. I like it. Good, man. Good stuff. Let's go to my next question. And you may have already touched on it. In fact, I kind of think I know what you might say to this, but feel free to pick something else as well. What is something that you are doing that you wish all other teachers would do?
Something that I'm doing that I wish all other teachers would do is I am teaching my students to be respectful and greet each other in the morning. So every morning they come in, they shake my hands. We're working on with our 5-year-olds making contact, saying good morning. We have a class greeter who, that's their job, is if we see a principal or another teacher in the hallway, if they wave to us, they go and shake their hand and they say good morning. And I think that's just teaching them how to have manners and be polite and be respectful citizens and being able to go up to anyone and greet them. And that it's made a huge impact, and the parents are also really impressed that they can go up and like shake each other's hands and go up and shake people's hands that they don't know. And it's a good life skill.
Yeah, it is. I remember being in the classroom and one day and realizing that my students did not know how to shake hands. And it became an obsession for me for the next like 2 weeks where I made everyone shake my hand as they walked in the room. I also got a cold shortly thereafter, but you know, that could have been unrelated. I like that idea of a class greeter. How does that work for you?
So
how do you do that?
The class greeter, we have to train them. We have to practice. We're probably like on 5 weeks of us practicing, four or five weeks of us practicing now. But basically, if the principal comes in or another teacher walks in, they just go quietly say like good morning or good afternoon and shake her hand. And then they come back and continue doing whatever we were doing or learning or their worksheet or whatever we're working at our tables. If we're in the classroom, they stand second in line, or then when we're in the hallway walking second in line, So that way, if someone greets us, they're right there. They just go quickly, shake the person's hand, say good morning, good afternoon, and then they get back in line. So that way it's not too disruptive, but.
Huh. I like that. I like that. I always forget about the littles and like what the elementary level is like and having duties in the classroom. But I think that's one that you could incorporate at any level, really. You know, I'm imagining that someone walks in to observe me and I have a student in my class that knows to stand up, greet the person that walked in and say, here's what we're working on today. That could be a really powerful strategy.
It is. And I have to tell you, the principal was blown away the first time that they did that. It was like flawless. Like she went up there, she shook her hand, she sat back down like nothing ever happened. And it was a great way to not interrupt the class flow, but like then the person still feels acknowledged. And
yeah. And then you get to be the person that, that the principal always brings guests to, which is really ultimately what you want, is just that constant admiration and recognition of your greatness, just caused mostly by training 5-year-olds, which, you know, around the Bronx just seems like a good idea.
Yes.
So good stuff. Excellent. Yeah. I like that. I think in general, teaching our students to be responsible and respectful and greet people, you're right. That's one of those lost arts almost, you know, even walking around with other teachers on campus, I feel like it's too easy sometimes to be lost in our phones or keep our head down or just not notice each other. And I think that's a really cool thing to do. I like that. I like that as a suggestion.
Thanks. I love it. I think that they've really grown a lot with it and they've really grown in maturity a lot.
Yeah, I like that. So cool. Very cool. Well, I have one more question for you. We're rocking and rolling and I got one last one for you. So my last question for all my guests is, who is the greatest teacher you ever had?
The greatest teacher that I ever had was probably, I'm going to say my mom's a teacher. So I'm going to say the greatest teacher I ever had was my mom. And so she was first, when I was born and when I was little, she was an insurance agent, and she went back to school, to go get her master's in education. And I've never seen someone so passionate about teaching. She's just always there for her students. It's so incredible to see. Like when I moved home from college and I was working my first teaching job, like we would both get home late at night, because she had the same passion for helping her students as much as she could. And she was that passionate about her job. And it was really, she's such a role model of what good teaching looks like. And she won an award from the state of Illinois for being a great teacher. And she's an AP economics teacher and she just teaches regular economics as well, and she's so passionate about it, and she's always there for her students. And you can see that, like, when they greet, like, we've gone to football games with her and they're like so excited to see her, and it's just amazing to see. So she's been my role model as what a great teacher and what a hardworking teacher looks like.
This is a really cool experience to have. You know, my father is also, and podcast listeners will know, my father is also was a teacher and then was an administrator. And, you know, so I definitely get that, where you can get that role model component of it. I think it's really cool. And it's something that, you know, can bring you two closer together. But then I like how you're saying that it also gets to push forward and support the new students in front of you now with what she has taught you. That's just such a cool relationship to have, a cool connection to have.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. She's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. That is excellent. Well, Jennifer, that's what I've got. I got 3 questions and you rocked right through them. I appreciate it. I really appreciate your time. You had a lot of great things to say. I hope my listeners will definitely reach out to you for more ideas on culturally responsive teaching.
Yep.
I think I got there. Culturally responsive teaching. I said your name right and then I blew that phrase the entire episode. I'm on point. I'm an absolute professional here at the Planning Theory Podcast. So I really do appreciate your time, Jennifer. Thank you so much. And again, I hope my audience will reach out to you. If they would like to reach out to you, how can they get a hold of you best?
If you follow me on Instagram, that's where I do most of my social media contact. And it's at the Multicultural Classroom. If you follow me, you can follow me at the Multicultural Classroom on Instagram. And do you want my Twitter too?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
How bad is this? I don't know it offhand. So it's LAROCQ. It's at LAROCQUEK_BR.
Okay. Excellent. Well, I will include links to both of those, of course, in the show notes. And to my audience, I would encourage you to reach out to her on Instagram or on Twitter, but preferably Instagram, where you can, like me, not be able to say her username. Just type it. It makes things easy. Multicultural classroom. Now, I have one last question now that I'm thinking about it. How good are your kindergartners at saying culturally?
We haven't talked about culturally, like, in context, but I can try it out tomorrow and see how good they're at it.
All right. Well, I'm hoping to hear from you tomorrow. I want to see an Insta video about your kids trying to say culturally, and I bet they say it better than me, and then I'm just going to feel bad about myself. And so, you know, I really think that's what should happen. So Jennifer, again, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me on the show and giving me insight into your classroom. To connect with Jennifer, find her on Instagram at The Multicultural Classroom or Twitter, LAROCQ_BR. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter or Instagram at Brad Schreffler as well. I'd love to hear from you there, and it's also a great way to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or check out the feedback page on my website, which gives you some additional feedback options, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Links to all of those, of course, are in the show notes. Until next week, teach your kids to shake hands.
Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.